So as Jim mentioned, we're having a householder retreat this week, which is a retreat that really focuses on daily life practice. And so that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. The retreat is open to anyone for any part of the time. If you can't come to all of it, that's fine. So if you're interested in exploring what I talk about tonight a little bit more fully with some support during the week, you're welcome to join us at any time. And the schedule is out on one of the flyers on the table. And then on Saturday, we'll have a day-long retreat to kind of wrap up the week. So as Jim mentioned, I really quickly got drawn into intensive retreat practice in my meditation practice, but for the first 6 months or so of my practice, my focus was really on daily life practice. In fact, I didn't start actually meditating for about 3 months after I started learning about mindfulness. So this practice in daily life has been a huge part of my practice. And it's something I love to share with people because it's a place where so much growth and understanding of not only my own personal difficulties and issues came, because that's really where we hit. It's where the rubber meets the road in our practices, in our daily life. We really run up against all kinds of difficulty. And I really found that a dedicated effort and practice in daily life, not just on the cushion in daily life, but in the midst of life, was extremely helpful and very eye-opening. So that's what I'd like to talk about this evening. So I'll just start by saying, I did start this practice without sitting meditation at all, and found actually that quite a deep understanding of the nature of experience can be had through simply committing myself to waking up to anger, for example. But I don't want to downplay the value of the sitting practice. So I do encourage you all in your daily life practice to find some time to incorporate sitting meditation if that's all possible for you. But in terms of moving our mindfulness into our daily life, one thing that I found and that was helpful for me when I first started, I read a book by Joko Beck called Everyday Zen, and she really talked about this daily life mindfulness practice in this book. And in the book, she said one thing that really struck me, and she said, if you set yourself up to try to be mindful all day long, you're going to fail. So don't try to do that. Instead, pick some manageable sized chunks and try to pay attention to those. So in my life at that point, I was basically a completely new meditator. I didn't have any training in meditation. All I had was this book. I was in the Peace Corps. I was in the middle of the South Pacific, and there weren't any Vipassana instructors there. So I just had this book, and it said, okay, pick some things. She suggested picking some projects to pay attention to and have that be your focus of mindfulness. And so for myself at that point, the reason I was getting into the practice at all was because I was completely overwhelmed by anger. I had a tremendous anger at a friend, boyfriend who had broken up with me. So I was just completely ruled by this anger. And sometimes I found myself even kind of non-functional because this anger was so strong. And that was really what I wanted to deal with. Maybe, I thought, maybe this mindfulness could do help me somehow with this anger. And so I read the book and it says, well, when you notice this thing, then, you know, pay attention to it. And I didn't particularly know what that meant because I'd never had any mindfulness instructions. But I simply said to myself, okay, I'm going to wake up for this anger. And when I first started noticing it, because the anger was so strong, it didn't tend to dissipate because my mind fed it. And so I did eventually wake up for the anger. And by that point, I was in a full-blown rage. So it was pretty painful to pay attention to. But over the course of time, and I didn't actually know what to do with it at that point. You know, it was like, okay, I'm angry. I was supposed to pay attention to that. What does that mean anyway? I didn't even really know because I didn't have much training. I didn't know about what it meant to pay attention in the body. It's just kind of, it's like all I could say was, yes, I'm angry. There was just this simple recognition of anger. And just that simple recognition over months, this process happened over months, unfolded over months. It began to, the mindfulness began to kick in sooner in this process of anger building up. And I'd find myself being more just a normal anger as opposed to in a full-blown rage. And I noticed that this wasn't nearly as painful as the full-blown rage and that there was a little bit more ease in being able to just be, okay, this is anger, I know this is anger, and to just be there with it. And over the course of time, at some point, I was in my kitchen and I was cutting an apple. And I know many of you have heard this story, but I'm going to tell it again anyway. I was cutting an apple, and I saw a thought arise in my mind about the person I was angry with. And I was with that person at a fruit stand. So I saw the connection between what I was doing, cutting the apple, and the thought. And I also noticed that I wasn't angry at that moment. But I did notice this really strong pull to like leap on that thought and think more thoughts in order to get angry. There's this pull, this almost this desire for the anger. And in that moment of seeing that pull towards the anger, and having spent several months paying attention to what anger actually felt like, in that moment, the mind simply said, I don't think so. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to take that path because I know where it's headed. I know how much suffering is down that path. And I stood there, having made what I thought was a choice to not get angry. And I waited to get angry. Because I'd never had this person since my boyfriend broke up with me, never had him arise in my mind without anger arising in my mind. So I just didn't think it was possible to have that happen. But I stood there waiting to get angry, and I didn't get angry. And I was so blown away in that moment by the power of mindfulness to uncover the seeds of where the anger actually begins. And this was all before I don't remember whether I'd actually started sitting meditation by the time this event happened. But that event of seeing that choice, seeing that the mind was headed in that direction, and that in seeing of it, there was a choice to let it go, that was an extremely powerful moment. And that is the moment that hooked me to the practice. That's the moment that this stuff is worth doing. This is really powerful. So this is what I mean by the way we can really begin to explore our difficulties in our daily life. So this coming back to this picking something, picking a project to pay attention to. I picked something pretty challenging because I didn't have much choice. It was destroying my life, basically. But you can choose many things to help wake yourself up during the day. Also during this time, I not only picked that project, I picked another project. I picked switching between DOS and Windows on my computer. And this actually... And this actually was quite, unintentionally wise on my part because it was a very neutral activity. You know, it was just something that happened and there wasn't any particular charge around switching between DOS and Windows, you know. There was no emotional content around it. It was just something that happened. And seeing from that, and it was also something that happened regularly throughout my day. You know, I was doing it probably 3 or 4 times an hour. So every few minutes, I would get this reminder to wake up by this event happening. So choosing a project like this, something pretty neutral, something that happens regularly through your day, this can be a really excellent starting point for trying to get our mindfulness incorporated into our daily life. Now, if you make this kind of a practice, I want to give you some warnings about this because you're likely, if you decide to do something like this, it's likely to be the case that, say you decide that you want to pay attention to standing up from a chair. You know, you can pick many things. Standing up from a chair, turning on a light switch, reaching for doors. Anything that happens kind of regularly through your day. So if you decide to do something like this, then for the first few days, perhaps, of your making this choice, this determination, I'm going to do this, you probably aren't going to remember. And you'll remember some night before you're going to bed, this is what happened to me. You know, all day long I was switching between DOS and Windows and I didn't remember once. That moment is not a failure. It's not the time to say, well, obviously I can't do this. Forget it. That's actually the moment where it begins. That's where the moment where the practice begins. So at that point, when you have remembered it, there's no need to judge yourself. And that's why I'm just going to describe this whole process, because this is the way it seems to unfold for most people that I worked with to doing this. So this is just the way it's going to unfold. So just at that point, don't give yourself a hard time, but simply say, okay, I forgot, but I'm going to resolve to wake up for this standing up. Just re-resolve to do that again, to just resolve again. And then over time, what will happen is you'll start to notice perhaps that you're starting to notice maybe in the middle of the day. You know, you haven't let a couple days go by, but sometime in the middle of the day, an hour or so after you've stood up, you remembered, oh, I stood up 3 times in the last hour and I didn't remember. So the awareness of what you've chosen to pay attention to is getting closer to the event. And this is a sign of the mindfulness getting stronger. It still feels like you're not doing it, but the mindfulness is getting stronger around this topic. And at some point, what you'll notice is that right after it's happened, you'll remember, oh, I just stood up and I wasn't present for it. And that's, it's even getting stronger. And at some point, you'll remember right in the activity. And at that point, the power of having chosen something like this begins to become more clear, because then it serves almost as a mindfulness bell. So every time I switched between DOS and Windows on the computer, or every time I was doing that, because I don't do that anymore. Every time I did that, it like woke me up for just a moment, just a split second. Oh, here I am. I'm awake. What's happening? And that's the moment to really begin to touch into that very general, very broad awareness that I was pointing to in that guided meditation. This isn't a detailed kind of mindfulness to suddenly say, okay, well, where's the pressure on my butt and how hard is it and what about my hands and what about that muscle in my shoulder? You know, we're talking about a really broad kind of mindfulness here. What's happening in a very general sense? Knowing that you're awake, knowing that you're present, and simply being there in that moment. And there's no need to hold on to the awareness at that point. Just simply let your day continue. There's no need to try to grasp and try to keep this going. But simply let this kind of regular reminder of the chosen activity that you have decided to wake up for, let it keep bringing that very general mindfulness into your day on a regular basis. So I found this to be a very valuable practice. And I've done it with so many different things throughout my practice. You know, I've chosen various things. At one point I was I chose the whole act of getting up to go to the bathroom when I had to go to the bathroom at work. And it was like a 2 or 3 minute event, you know. And just the whole thing, the deciding to get up, the standing, the walking to the bathroom, the unlocking the door, the doing everything in the bathroom, washing the hands, leaving, coming back and sitting down. And what I discovered is that whole experience, bringing mindfulness to it, made me feel like I'd had a little break, almost a little vacation during my day, because it had really taken my mind away from all of the spinning and churning around what do I have to do, what do I need to accomplish in the next hour of my workday. So you can choose so many things. Washing dishes, you can choose... Well, washing dishes you don't typically do regularly through the day, but something that happens pretty regularly is a really helpful choice for this kind of an exercise. You can also choose something like I chose. If there's something up for you, some kind of difficult state, grief or anger or frustration or impatience, some kind of a mood that you find really challenging to work with, you can let that be your mindfulness bell also. I did this for a while with impatience, because impatience was such a big deal for me. And, you know, I just started noticing it. I wasn't trying to stop it or anything when it happened, but just to say, what is happening? You know, when impatience comes up, be there for it. And what happened actually was that I started noticing that it was all over the place. It was much more common than I even thought it was. I was impatient when I was brushing my teeth. And at one point, after a couple of months of this exercise, I saw impatience arise. And the next thought was, I've been looking at this impatience for 2 months. There it is again. And I just had to laugh at that point, you know, so the mind, you know, so it really can be a very interesting exploration to explore these kinds of things. Another mode or avenue of practice in daily life is around a particular list in Buddhist psychology called the 10 perfections or the paramis. And this is a set of qualities that we cultivate as we broaden, as we awaken to our lives, as we bring attention and mindfulness to our lives, these qualities are cultivated. And the ten paramis, they're very lovely qualities. They're generosity, virtue, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. In traditional practice in Asia, these 10 qualities are given as practices to lay people. This is really the area that we cultivate in our daily lives. In traditional Buddhist practice, somebody comes to the monastery for some months, cultivates their meditation practice, cultivates mindfulness, concentration. And then when they leave the monastery, they work on generosity, loving kindness, equanimity. So these qualities are really part and parcel of daily life practice. And they're really beautiful qualities to work with in our daily life. I know many of you attended Gil's year-long series on the paramis. And he really gave an in-depth exploration of these qualities. So I'll just talk briefly about some simple ways to work with these qualities. So you might just pick one for a period of time to work with, for a month or even longer. And there's different ways to work with these qualities in your daily life. And the first is to find ways, first of all, is simply mindfulness of the quality. Notice when it's present. So notice when you feel, let's say we're working on patience. Notice when you feel patient. Notice that quality in your experience. Another way, which is the way I chose because it seemed more obvious to me, is to look at the opposite. What is in the way of patience? Impatience. So I chose to look at impatience. So there's basically two avenues of mindfulness for these qualities: to look at the quality itself, to pay attention to when the quality is present, and to pay attention essentially to its opposite. And notice what happens for you around that. There's also practices for some of these qualities of mind, formal practices to actually cultivate some of these qualities, like metta, for example, the quality of loving kindness. There's the formal metta practice that we sometimes do in meditation here. I talked about it a few weeks ago in this evening sitting. And so there is that formal practice of metta, but we can also carry that into our day and just see if we can bring that to our interactions with people. Bring it to our interaction with ourself, to be kind to ourself. Ways I've worked with this, saying metta to the people I pass on my morning walk. Just a very, just one simple phrase in my mind. May you be happy. At one point I used Safeway as my metta monastery. Whenever I went into Safeway, that was my, I walk in the door and it would be my metta practice arena. And there's a lot of suffering in Safeway. Children screaming and parents having difficulty and people arguing over what to buy. I mean, it's amazing, So I did a lot of metta in the Safeway. So you can be creative with it. Gil likes to suggest the airport is a good place also for metta. A lot of people suffer in airports. And it's also a good way to, counteract the tendency towards your own suffering as you're sitting in the airport to be doing this practice. Another way to work with these qualities is as a reflection, an actual, not a thoughtful reflection, but a meditative reflection in your daily life. And the way I'd learned this kind of a meditation from Ajahn Amaro. He's a monk that lives up at the Abhayagiri Monastery in Ukiah in Northern California. And he suggested that if you wanted to reflect on something, that you let yourself get quiet in meditation and then let that thing that you want to reflect on after some, you know, period of time, let that thing drop into your meditation as a thought, simply as a, you know, a thought into your meditation. And then let go of the thought and see what bubbles up in your experience. What is the impact of that, dropping that thought in to your experience? There's a lot that we can learn in a very nonverbal way about our relationship to that thing through attending in a very quiet way to what kind of just appears. And there may be thoughts that appear, and you can just notice those thoughts and let them go. There may be moods, there may be bodily sensations. Whatever appears, just let it appear, take note of it, and then let it go. I did this at one point on looking at sila, at ethics, wanting to understand for myself what are the benefits of ethics. And so I did this for a period of a few weeks and simply, you know, did this for maybe 10 minutes a day. And after that 10 minutes, I took some notes in my journal to just help me remember. And then after a couple of weeks, I looked back and reviewed my notes. So that during the process of this reflective practice, there's no need to think about what's happening. But it's helpful afterwards to take some notes, to review, to write it down. And then you can go back over it and actually think about it later. Think about your relationship to this topic. And this could be anything. You could do this with the paramis to understand and work at your relationship with the paramis. But anything. It could be a decision that you need to make. You know, how do I feel about the decision if I make it this way? And let yourself rest in the space of what that means to you. There's another key piece to daily life practice, and that has to do with paying attention to intention. And this is really, it's a huge area of exploration, and it's actually the key turning point. The Buddha said it's the key turning point to where we move from. We move either into suffering or into freedom, this place of intention. And so it's a very valuable place to look. But it can be challenging to see, challenging to notice. But intention is this, it's a subtle shift of mind. It's a very subtle movement that occurs before any movement of body, of speech, or of mind. So before, any time we act, any time we speak, before any time we even think, there is a gathering of intention for that action to happen. It's kind of phenomenal when you start to really pay attention how much choice we have. In every single moment of our lives, we have a choice whether to sit still or to move. We have a choice of whether to move a little finger or our arm. It's phenomenal about how much there is in this intention. In and of itself, intention, the intention itself, that urge to move or urge to speak, in and of itself, that intention is pretty much a neutral event. but it's accompanied by a motivation or a reason that that intention to move arose. And that's the place that's really valuable to see. Why is it that I'm choosing to get up? Maybe it's simply because I need to go to the bathroom. Or why is it that I'm reaching for the refrigerator door? Am I bored? Or is there really a need? Do I really need to get some food? So what is the motivation behind the action? The action itself, the Buddha taught that the action isn't necessarily the thing that will lead us into suffering or happiness, but it's the intention behind the action that is the key. So bringing awareness to this is really helpful, but it can be challenging, as I said. One place you can start to look at this, if you choose to do this kind of an exercise that I mentioned earlier around picking something that happens regularly through your day, reaching for doors or standing up from a chair. At some point, when you've gotten to the place where that thing is triggering the mindfulness, you'll probably know at some point, the moment before you're going to stand up, you're going to know, I'm getting ready to stand up, and the mindfulness has already kicked in. You'll know that you're going to do it before you do it. And that's the intention, that knowing you're going to do it before you do it. And in that moment, you can just check in and say, why? What's the reason right now? And you can begin to tap into this motivation that comes joined up with the intention. Another powerful, really powerful place to practice with this, and it's a huge area of practice in daily life in general, is with speech. I don't think there's anybody probably who hasn't had some moment of speech that they've regretted and wished they could take back, wished they had waited a moment before they said it, thought a moment before they said it. So bringing mindfulness to speech can have a great deal of benefits, not only to our own internal peace of mind, but to our relationships. So paying attention to speech is really, really challenging. It is probably the most difficult area to bring mindfulness to. Most of the time, we just speak completely automatically. We're not even paying attention much to what we're saying. It's just kind of pouring out of our mouth. And much less are we paying attention to the impact that it's having on somebody else or why we're saying it. So a powerful exercise to try with speech is to try simply pausing for a split second before you speak. Now, this is enough of a practice in and of itself. Just to remember to pause takes a lot of mindfulness. And you might try this as get together with a friend from the Sangha sometime and have lunch and try this. Try this exercise of pausing before you speak. And just notice what happens. And in that pause, if you pause before you speak, you're probably going to see what you're going to say before you say it. And you're likely also, possibly, to be able to see why you're going to say it in that split second. It doesn't actually take much time to see these things. The mind can take these things in very quickly. In just a half a second pause, the mind can know what it's going to say and why. And at that point, if you've seen that, then you perhaps have a choice about, is this a good thing to say? Is this a skillful thing to say? One time I was doing this with a friend at lunch, as I was suggesting that you guys try. And at some point in the conversation, I found myself sitting there thinking the thought that I was going to say and realizing, nope. I want to say that over and over again. And I just sat there in silence for it felt like a really long period of time. And finally, I just said to him, I've just been thinking these thoughts and ruling them all out. I'm not going to say these things. And that I could say, that I could say and feel like it was a reasonable thing to say. So it can be really humbling, actually, when we start to look at speech, because we do see the motivations behind a lot of our speech, sometimes questionable, you know. A lot of it has to do with self-puffing, wanting to make ourselves look good to the other person, look good in comparison to somebody else, or somehow denigrate somebody else so that you look better. Or just it's quite a lot about self. So it can be kind of humbling to practice with it. There's no need to beat yourself up about it. Really, this is an exploration. It's so amazing what our minds do. Have some, like, awe of the amazing qualities of the mind. Its amazing ability to delude itself, to think things are worthwhile when a little moment of reflection can show, maybe not. So it's really valuable. So I want to leave a few moments. We have about 5 minutes. And just because I've given a lot of kind of basically instruction here. This has been mostly an instructional talk to help give you some ideas about ways that you might bring this practice into your life. Or as Gil said it one day, bring your life into your practice. So are there any comments or questions? Yeah.
What was the name of the book,
Everyday Zen.
Everyday Zen.
Everyday Zen by Joko Beck.
Helps to be able to see. I'm wondering what the value of the awareness of the body during this process is. Because to me it always seems like a distraction. Oh, my scalp's itchy, oh, my ear's aching, or whatever. Muscle. This muscle is tight, that muscle is loose. What does that have to do with what you're trying to achieve here?
Mostly, I think, the power of paying attention to the body in large part comes from the fact that there's a really tight connection between the mind and the body. And if there's an emotional response in the mind, there's going to be some response that follows in the body from it. And so, you know, if you're paying attention to, you know, your itching on your scalp, that may not be, you know, so helpful. But if you're connecting to a mood of impatience and feeling a kind of tension and contraction in the body around it, it does a couple of things. First of all, it really shows you that tight connection between the mind and the body, and it can help to take some of the identification around I'm impatient and this is going to hang around for a while. We start noticing the sensations in the body. We notice they change and the mood changes. And so we begin to tap in a little bit to the impermanence of the emotion. The other piece that it can really be powerful for is a lot of our experience in our daily life is around thoughts. And emotions hook into thoughts. And anytime we are like experiencing anger, for instance, it can be really powerful pull into the thoughts around the anger. And if we can come into the body and experience the bodily sensations around anger, it's a very powerful avenue to stay with the emotion, stay with what's happening, and not get caught in the thoughts. So that's really, it's mostly powerful for that. For that reason, is that the connection, the mind-body connection, and having an understanding of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes much more sense. I mean, if you led us through the pay attention to the top of your head, to this, to that, the other thing, I didn't see how it came together.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, in the back.
Can it be helpful to pick one of the paramis and work on cultivating that in your life, like bringing a conscious awareness to cultivating that quality?
Yes, I was suggesting that you try that, for a period of time, that it can be really helpful to have it as your focus for a month or even two or even longer, depending on how much it is up for you. Yeah, it's very powerful. Yeah.
How about an individual at work, say someone you've had a long-term relationship, but it hasn't been a very good one? And
in that kind of a situation, there's probably a lot going on, And I would pick maybe one thing out of the relationship, like I don't know if there's a particular style of interaction that leaves you with a particular mood. Pay attention to that mood. And perhaps you can notice how it begins and what the triggers are around it. Where you're congealing around that particular thing. So I would take something out of the entire gestalt of that situation and focus on just a piece of it to start. Is it, something like that. It's like you need some little thread into it to start to unravel it. Yeah.
Okay.
So we need to stop now. So thank you for your attention.